Let's go down to the Urban Homestead, Pasadena by the freeway. Right down there on the Urban Homestead, Jules and his family are working away. Come on down to the farm in the city, back to the future, back to the plan. Right down there on the Urban Homestead, loving the life back into the land.
Oh, ooh, help the garden grow.
Singing,
oh, ooh,
we've got to help the garden grow.
Welcome to the Urban Homestead Radio. We are your hosts, Anise,
Justin,
Jordan. Hi folks, thanks for tuning in. Today we have a friend and musical guest, Mo Everett III, better known as Little Mo. Mo and Mike, along with his friend Mike, are here. Thanks for being here today. Tell us, Mo, a little bit more about yourself and your music.
Now. I should speak now.
You should speak now.
Okay. Hello everybody out there in radio and television land. This is Little Mo talking, and sitting next to me is Spanish Mike Sobieski, which is an old Spanish name.
Castilian name.
So old. I've got two bands. Mike happens to be in both of them, the poor guy. One is called Little Mo and the Dynaflows, and for the last 13 years, we've been doing traditional, up-tempo, danceable doo-wop. Four-part harmony, jumping rhythm and blues, backed by a beautiful four-piece band behind us. And the other band is called The Unholy Four. We are a quartet that does, pre-1965 style rockabilly rhythm and blues, with a hard emphasis on swamp blues from East Texas and Louisiana.
Sounds about right.
Awesome. So yeah, we've had Mo. We've had the pleasure of hearing you and some of your guys at the Hootenannies.
She said pleasure.
And around town. So you've played a couple venues around town. So tell us more. Like you go overseas and here around town, you're always playing gigs. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, let me see how spiritual I can get here. I'm very lucky and very blessed to have been picked up by a wonderful German label about 5 or so years ago called Rhythm Bomb Records. They heard me playing in Las Vegas, and then they contacted me when I was at a festival gig in England and signed up both bands to record under their label. I'm distributed throughout Europe and now over in Japan as well by this label. And through the attention that's brought me, I've had a lot of gigs from Finland to Italy to Spain and France and England several times. Belgium and Germany have chimed in as well.
Oh, that's awesome. So how did you hear about the Homestead and the Hootenannies?
Roughly around the same time I was signed up for that label, a gentleman named Terry Kirkman and I ran into each other at another event. And he said, well, you're a young musician and you seem to have a lot of gumption. I think that was his word. Terry uses the word gumption a lot. That he was shaking his head against at me at the same time, so maybe he was kidding. But anyway, he told me about this wonderful Pasadena Central backyard experiment where musics and liberals and hippies and scallywags of all natures would get together and share the gift of music and social interaction together. Sort of with a emphasis on the way it was done back in the 60s with the Weavers, the Almanac Singers, the Guthries, the Seegers, even the Clancy Brothers and Ian and Sylvia and Joan Baez and Dylan chiming in and creating political awareness, and social interaction.
Yeah, so yeah, we believe that
makes sense.
Because that's what the homestead, the Urban Homestead was about, was not only were we growing food, but we wanted to grow community, and also what's farming without music, and especially backyard music and acoustic. So we were thrilled to have you join us.
I don't know if I ended that story, but Terry brought me here.
Yeah, you brought you here.
About five or so years ago,
okay,
and I think I got up on stage after having dinner here the very first time.
We haven't got a bit of you yet.
For some reason, y'all kept inviting me back.
Justin, do you have a question for Mo?
Who does my hair?
Oh. Yes, who does your hair?
This is just audio. They can't see the hair. So.
That's the good part.
It's really good.
Oh, thank you.
So, what songs are you going to be performing today?
I have no idea. We're just going to look at each other and go, oh, that one?
Yeah, that one.
We've got stuff from both bands that we can call on.
Okay.
Mostly ones that would fit the acoustic guitar and tempo the best, I think.
Try something
else? You
want to
go for it?
You want to go for something?
Yeah.
You guys want to hear something?
Yeah!
Oh my God, they're crazy. They're rabid here. Let's start off with Maybe Baby. Get it rocking. You remember. Yeah.
Is that in?
The key of, huh?
Okay.
Cool with the rain coming down in the background. It's kind of fun.
It is kind of fun. So, I have a question.
Please tell me your question.
What has inspired you through your music?
Well,
people or
meeting Mike and sharing the relationship we have. Oh no, wait. Sorry. Let's take two. We can. This isn't live, right? We can cut that out. Okay. Sorry. It was what has inspired me to do this?
Music, and who's inspired you?
Well, I got to go back to my folks. Just they started me off so early with a record collection before I was 4 years old. I had a little Playtel plastic record player, which was supposed to only play, you know, your plastic records on. But, you know, my dad was buying, hoarding records.
So they enabled
among
you.
Other things. Oh, totally enabled. Totally. And I'd get, you know, his duplicates that he found, you know, whether it was an RCA copy of Hound Dog by Elvis Presley or if it was D. Clark singing Raindrops, you know, appropriately. Or I remember the platters and the coasters and what was it? Yeah, the coasters doing like Charlie Brown and Yakety Yak. And I'd run around my bedroom dancing to this stuff and breaking the ones that I was too careless to pick up off the floor. And that was from my dad. Still do that, yeah. But from my mom, she showed me a heavy influence on American and Irish folk music. And also on soundtracks of TV, but mostly Broadway and film. So I was getting show tunes like Camelot and Once Upon a Mattress, and especially The Fantastics and Jacques Brel is Alive and Well and Living in Paris, and all the Rodgers and Hammerstein stuff that you could still see on independent but local TV at the time, like, you know, Sound of Music and Oklahoma.
Cool.
cool.
That is not me. I don't know what that is. What kind of what kind of creature are we hearing there, Jordan?
It's your background.
That's
your background.
Chicken.
Oh, we got some chickens.
A chicken laid an egg.
Nice.
It's actually announcing it. But speaking of the animals.
Yeah.
I know you have a lot of pets.
I do.
Tell me about them. All of them.
Well, I've been married for about 10 years. Been with my wife for about 14. And before she came into my life, I had one cat. I was a single cat man. Listen to me closely, all you single men out there in Radioland. Then I met a beautiful little redhead, and she came into my world. Within 6 months, she was living with me. Within a year, we had bought some 3 more cats, a couple parrots, a couple rabbits, some chinchillas, a snake, several rare and exotic toads and frogs, and turtles. And then we moved into our first house together, and the cat population continued to grow. The dog population began. The chinchillas left, the rabbits left, the reptiles left, but the birds kept coming. Right now we stand at 8 cats,
wow,
5 dogs, and 2 parrots, and 1 barely housebroken redheaded wife. Hi, Jenny. I knew you'd like that joke.
You actually have a zoo.
Well, I really think that I was not meant to have human children, being that I am still a human child, man-child myself. I'd have to grow up and have a mental capacity more than that of a 10-year-old before I am allowed in Southern California to breed. That's right, people. Even in us liberal states, we have laws and decency. Now, Mike has a child. He's allowed to breed.
That's right.
But that's probably because he spent the last 22 years in Madrid, Spain, and they are much more liberal out there than we are here.
Yeah. Tell us about yourself.
Mike, let's hear about you.
Yeah, well, I lived in Madrid, Spain from 1987 until 2010. That's where I met my wife, and we had our son over there. And I was playing music, touring around, traveling, enjoying life.
Yeah. Mike is Pasadena born and raised, though.
Wow.
His father has a wonderful house just off the Arroyo, and it's gorgeous, 2-story Craftsman, and much like this home right here, but even bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's very impressive. It has a nice pool. Anyway, and you were playing guitar before you went overseas.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's been touring over there with punk and rockabilly-influenced bands for a very long time, and almost the year that he got back here into town, he came and saw my band, the Dynaflows, play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rusty's Rhythm Club.
Yeah, that's Little Mo and the Dynaflows again, plug.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, gosh, this band is fantastic. And I'm paraphrasing, being that he's right here, he could probably tell the story better.
Well, I saw them play, and I was duly impressed. And then my wife decided, I haven't been playing for a while, she decided to pass a CD of all my stuff to Cliff Kwan, who's another singer in the band, to his wife. And so she gave the CD to Cliff.
See how the wives work?
There you go.
Right? And then, lo and behold, I got us an invitation to come substitute with them.
Oh, cool.
And then I subbed, I don't know how many times, for years.
Once? Twice? That was it, man. Then we were like, yeah, Mike.
And then they asked me to join the band. So
awesome.
That was great.
Yeah. The thing about Mike is that even at the beginning, when he wasn't quite feeling sure of himself, he could improvise so well.
Mm-hmm.
And when my rockabilly group, the Unholy Four, went through a lineup change, I said, well, there's nowhere I need to look besides my phone book and call up Mike directly. So the poor boy got drafted into both bands around the same year.
Yeah, he's been
here ever since.
Yeah.
Such a shame.
Unholy Four performed here, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And then for the Rob Sanford Wake and Celebration.
No, Brother Where Art Thou.
Yes.
No Brother Where Art Thou.
Yes, yes. But for the Wake, we had members of the Dynaflows here for the first time.
Yeah, okay.
And they combined with members of the Unholy Four.
That's
and
right.
Then Mo, you were in here for our dad's memorial, too.
Yes.
So that was nice. So,
yes, yes.
Yeah, did a couple songs.
Where we played that last song, the Buddy Holly song we just did.
Yeah, there you go. Because dad would always light up, like I say, like a Christmas tree, because when you would come in, because the songs would just really make everybody, I mean, you can't have a bad day listening to those
songs. Well, it's
songs,
good to have one fan in the world. Just dad.
Dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think everybody
a lot of fans.
Yes, you definitely do. Yeah, so any other questions for Mo, or you want to go into another song?
You want to play something?
We want to do, let's do 100,000 Reasons.
Okay.
This is a song from 1948, written by a blind cowboy troubadour named Leon Payne. I heard it performed live at the Big D Jamboree in Dallas, Texas. 'cause you understand, dear. Every single thing I try to do, and you're always there to lend a helping hand, dear. But most of all, the way you never doubt me. But most of all, I love you 'cause you're you. Come on, Mikey boy. You because my future is brighter, and the doors to happiness you've opened wide. And no matter what might be the style or season, ooh, I know your heart will always be true. For 100,000 reasons, but most of all, I love you 'cause you're you. Nice. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, I think Elvis might have covered that, but I'm not sure if that's one. Yeah. Yeah.
That was a question I have about how has being here on the homestead, the urban homestead, changed maybe your view of food or sustainability?
Yes.
Has, you know, have you changed like how you, you know, lived a bit or how you interact with the environment?
I am probably not the most changed of anybody in this room, that's for sure. My junk food diet is hard to crowbar me away from. But I have enjoyed many a meal here, both inside the kitchen and at the tables out here in the backyard. I also regularly buy, whether it's honeys or teas or vegetables from the front. But right now, we are suckers for your New Guinean coffee that you guys import here. It's just my wife's favorite thing. Every morning, she can't live without it.
All right, we'll send you home with a bag for sure.
Well, I will not say no. I ain't a fool. I went to college. I know how to mooch.
Did you expect to find something like this in Casadena? Like
oh,
this?
God, no.
Was it...
No.
What was it walking into?
This was walking into a flashback for me. At least, you know, I'm expecting, you know, when I first came to LA, I lived in Santa Monica near 3rd Street Promenade. So I was walking in and out of various, you know, fast food restaurants and very expensive West Side restaurants. And they would have a monthly farmer's market off of 3rd Street Promenade. But being that I was still a young single lad, barely out of college and barely with a kitchen of my very own, I didn't know how to take care of my own cooking at all if it wasn't microwaved. So coming here roughly half a decade ago opened up a doorway that my wife and I could step into at any time we want to get fresh, no MSG, no chemicals doused on it, goodies, whether they be eggs or whether they be fruits and veggies, and take them on home to our own house, which is only 2 miles away,
and then
less
you,
than.
You re-landscaped your place too, right?
Yeah,
we did.
Natives and stuff, I think, too.
Right? We We moved into our home in Pasadena roughly 9 years ago. And about 6 years ago, while I was on tour in Europe, my wife dug up the entire front yard, removing 25 tons of dead topsoil, about 2 or 3 inches, and put in recycled DG, or decomposed granite, which apparently is just totally rich in vitamins for growing veggies. I had no idea. But we have chard that looks like something from a monolith monster movie from the 1950s. It's so big. It towers almost at 6 feet high. Brussels sprouts are almost as bad. Kale, almost as strong. We have bamboo shoots that surround our outdoor dining room, which provide natural shade from the harsh sun on occasional days. We have an outdoor kitchen now that was donated by her grandparents down in Orange County. They're too old to use it. They're like, we've never used it. Take it, take it, take it. Outdoor rotisserie, outdoor sink and oven and fridge. And I'm a horrible cook, but my wife loves to use all that. And I sit back and go, yes, dear, you want what from the freezer? I can go get that. That's how I live. Yeah. It's very nice to have. It's changed my life more through the connections of the people who live here and the people who show up once in a blue moon. Mm-hmm. Even some of the regulars are kind of nice and kind of cool. Yeah. And we're there for each other.
Yeah.
We've been there through ups and downs.
Last year.
And you've been here for us, and we really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Last year's been rough. Lost three close people to everybody here. So, and you lost couple people in
yeah, my grandparents
and things like that. So, so it makes us appreciate people even more. So Jay, you have a question?
Let's see. Probably a loaded question. What's your opinion of the music industry today?
Well, I'd have to get paid by it to give a professional opinion, right? So what's that like?
Advice to a new artist.
Get paid, because it's not working for us old timers without that. We make enough money to have a happy adventure, and probably not a lot more than that. We have brand new T-shirts that we're excited about with the Unholy Four. We have we released 2 new albums last year, one from each band. And of the 60 or so releases that our German label, Rhythm Bomb Records, put out, our Dynaflows, or doo-wop album, was the number one seller in Europe last year. With the Unholy Four, I believe, being either number 12 or 14.
So where do you find that online? Facebook?
Facebook is perfect, but rhythmbombrecords.com?
Rhythm Bomb Records.
Just Google Rhythm Bomb Records. You'll find all kinds of places you can pick us up. And I'm feeling so hot in here. I don't know. It's just,
You have a music video on YouTube too.
Oh, I have I have one professional video out there, but I really enjoy plugging the live fan taken videos that are out there as well, whether they're from Italy or France or the UK, or whether they're from here in our backyard in Pasadena, where we play 4 or 5 times a year. Oh, what's this?
Oh, there we go.
Oh,
I don't know what that is.
It's a T-shirt.
Why, it's the new Unholy Four shirt. Oh. Boy.
Everybody can see it.
This really works well now that I know there weren't filming today. But this came up from a guy named Henrik Sands, who does a lot of advertising art for various festivals here in America and in Europe. He's done work for the Tiki Oasis in San Diego, and he does album cover art for a lot of our compatriots on Rhythm Bomb Records and on Wild Records, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, really, to answer your question, Justin, coming back to it circular, I'd say play out locally. Don't be afraid to share band members with local Southern California bands, because there's no way you're going to find a completely new lineup band that isn't already busy in 2 or 3 or 4 other projects at the same time.
Unless you get them young.
Yeah, unless you get them straight out of high school, man. And even then, it's going to be tough. Yeah. The Rockasonics, who were playing in Vegas 2 weeks ago, are all of them under the age of 25, and they've been gigging out for 10 years. These boys, and they're just starting to be able to play festivals nationally, because I mean they couldn't do a lot of traveling, you know, without finishing high school first. That their families had this sort of golden rule.
Priorities.
Yeah. So make use of the local talent you find. Hook up with the festivals that are national and international to your country, whether that's New Zealand and Australia, where there are good festivals. You hear me, Arthur Matz? Bring us down. And or whether it's here in Southern California, where there's the School of Rock and Roll, or where there's Spike's Bar, and other places that put on day-long festivals locally, or going out and just get involved in the festivals in Vegas that happen once or twice a year, like the Viva Las Vegas Rockabilly Convention, which happens every Easter weekend, or go on up to Seattle for the Seattle Weekenders that they have going on up there at the Indian casinos. What do you think, Mike? Have I forgotten anything?
East Coast, the New England Shakeup.
The New England Shakeup and the Nashville Boogie are good people who have booked us both, and I want to give them both shout-outs for sure.
So what's your next gig?
Our next gig.
Is it Paramount, or is it Ballroom, Pasadena Ballroom?
Well, honestly, with health issues, I'm not quite sure about this summer. Mm-hmm. We've had to put some delays going on with some various band members' health issues, not just my own, but mostly my own, because I am a prima donna, and I want to look right. Not just my third eye, but everything. But we've got festival shows going on up in Seattle, New England, Mexico City, and England all this year, still booked.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, so we're traveling folks.
Speaking of traveling and overseas, what any like your best, your favorite place to play, and maybe some stories behind that, like touring stories?
Yeah, we went to France 2 years in a row to this town called
Béthune,
which is northern tip of France, and
very close to
and
the
we went one year, and it's, they shut down the whole town, and it's like a vintage weekender, and it's just like free to walk in, and there's bands playing like all over the place, car shows, thousands of people, and they brought us over 2 years ago.
2 years in a row, yeah.
And then they liked us and brought us back to headline the following year. So was pretty great.
Last fall we were over for the second time in a row. The Dynaflows got invited twice, and the Unholy Four one time as well. We were able to make a tour out of that, which was wonderful as well, opening up for our friends Big Sandy and the Fly Right Boys. Béthune was special because the crowd was ravenous for authentic American rockabilly and doo-wop. And they put us on the main stage for our doo-wop 2 nights in a row. And last year, we had our biggest crowd ever there with roughly 9,000 people in a 11th century cobblestone square with a tumble-down church spire in the middle of it. And just, it's the atmosphere is so well. The festival is run by the town's government. They pay for everything. So they have no problem taking musicians from Los Angeles and flying us all over. 2 years ago, it was 10 guys.
Yeah.
And then a round trip, they put us up wonderfully. They give us chickens to pet.
The cheese you want.
All the cheese. This man
cheese,
is a master of stinky cheese. If you guys are churning up some cheese, let him know.
Cheese and chocolate.
Oh, man.
I found it interesting that there was a visitor from France came, and they had been there, and they had seen you.
Oh, yeah?
I had no idea.
Yeah, they had seen you, and they came visited here, and they were like, we saw him
in France.
They thought it was really cool. And then also I have friends and family. I've had family of distant relatives in France. And they were posting photos in Belgium. And they were posting photos of you on stage.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I'm like, I know that guy. That's crazy. They're like, really? And I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Want a shout out to the Dax Bar in Belgium as well there. Yeah, definitely.
Put us up. Mexico City was pretty fun.
Hey, Dax Bar, I just want to say, get new beds.
Yeah, the
Mexico City.
Let's talk about
Mexico. We had a great time down in Mexico City.
We were invited with 3 weeks' notice last December to go down and play Mexico City for the first time. And some of our friends are like, oh, don't go. It's going to be scary. Some of those promoters are not very trustworthy. I'm like, yeah, that's in our backyard. Like, hold on to your passport. Don't do this, don't do that. Don't drink any of the water. They picked us up in tinted SUVs from the airport and wined us and dined us phenomenally.
Yeah, that was great.
Took us on tours of the temples of the sun and the moon, or an hour and a half outside the city.
I had a sprained ankle, so I couldn't go.
This man was on crutches the entire trip.
But so it has to happen again.
We played to a day-long festival down there to a crowd of roughly 800 or so in a converted old church, which is now a concert venue, a modern concert venue, with balconies and stained glass still there, and they gave us great food. The five-star accommodations in Central Mexico City. We're going back in October, and we couldn't be happier.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Without a sprained ankle.
Hopefully. Right. You want to know how he sprained his ankle, you know. It goes back to his kid in that splinter story again, so.
I just was going to try a skateboard out for, you know.
Hi, little ride. Mike. What are you doing to your father?
Got another song you guys share?
No. We don't know any other songs. No.
Okay.
So sad.
That was it.
It's two numbers, not names. Huh?
Numbers, not names.
This is an original song that we wrote for our latest album last year came out, The Unholy Four. And the name of the album is called The Big Payoff. Because we thought it was a big payoff for everybody. yeah, where's the money? I wrote this after listening to a lot of New Orleans stuff. Jimmy Charles. Ain't it a shame? Lord, ain't it a shame? Well, ain't it a shame? I'm the one to blame. In the end, all we are is numbers, not names. Broken hearts and broken dreams. Broken hearts and broken dreams. My 44 and my friend Jim Beam. Simple fear and impulsive rage. Simple fear and impulsive rage. Condemned, I stand here in a quartzite cage. Lord, have mercy. Left or right, the chair or bed. Left or right, the chair or bed. With a needle or plug, either way, I'll end up dead. Oh, ain't it a shame? Oh, ain't it a shame? Ain't it a shame? I'm the one who pays. In the end, all we are is numbers, not names. In a long, long row, numbers, not names. Guess y'all didn't catch that. That was about capital punishment. Thank you. Shout out to Excello Records, who I listen way too much to.
So when did you like first? What was your very first gig? Like when did you start playing? Besides like in your bedroom, like.
Hey, whoa! Is this the family show?
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure.
Playing yeah.
Because I swear to God, 4 years old, I was in a tap dancing onesie, dancing around my bedroom to Crocodile Rock with Elton John there. And we're not going to do it. No. Different band. Okay, all right. In roughly 1986, I had a garage punk band based out of Cleveland, Ohio, called the Munchkin Punks. Because you'd go to a hardcore punk show in Cleveland and you'd see these fourth graders with 1 foot high mohawks and spikes on their arms of their leather jackets running through the middle of the circle pit with their elbows out at around the crotch level of everybody else. They were vicious little creatures. So I was like, that's it. Munchkin Punks, man. That's what we are. All right. Because I've never really been one that, well, let me just say I am height challenged. And I identified with these little creatures myself. From there, and by the way, the Munchkin Punks were more famous for their stickers placed on bathroom walls of our other gigs than their actual music. Then there was Hardwire Spine, another punk band, which I hoped was going to be more of a political punk band, but just churned out, why doesn't she love me songs, like the Descendants. we played a couple college gigs in basements in Cleveland, and then I came out to California and tried again for another punk band called Hinkley Mist, which was really, I wanted to rip off Rage Against the Machine so bad, so I chose a really political name about the Reagan assassination attempt. And once again, it was all, why doesn't she love me songs? I don't know, that's just what I kept writing, I don't know. I was looking for love in all the wrong places. After that, I found a coffee house in Santa Monica, since departed, called Wednesday's Coffee House. It was on Main Street, just south of Ocean Avenue, and for about 10 years, they had an open mic there, and I'd play weekends and Wednesday nights, open mics there with a band that we called the Four Fs, because we were rejects, we thought, from a normal music scene, mm-hmm. and Four F from the Army being rejected from active service. We also called it the Simpletons, till we found out there was another punk rock band out there with that name already. And from there, I went off and I had a mod band that played up at a Knitting Factory and up at the Troubadour a couple times called The Motives. No play on my name this time. And around the time The Motives were ending, the Dynaflow started. Okay. And the Dynaflow started, and then a couple years later, the Unholy Four started. And that's my history.
Oh. Some music been a lot. So
the hecklers great. Out there think I speak
right?
too long. Yeah.
The chickens.
Yeah.
So, Jesse, you have a question for Mo?
No.
Yeah, what do you got? We got, let's see. Oh, yeah, let's say, let me think about, let's see, what are we doing? Yeah, like, besides other, your pets and stuff, you have any other, and music?
I like to knit.
Hobbies.
I like to clog dance. Now, wait a minute. They have clog dancing here.
What about hobbies?
Hobbies. I'm a hoarder. Mm-hmm. I'm a collector. Mm-hmm. Because music does not pay all the bills. Let's just be frank and truthful there. I sell vintage original pre-1985 film posters online, specifically. Mostly American title stuff, but I could, sell whatever paper I find from whatever country of origin that comes my way, but mostly American titles going back for the last 100 years. It's something I just learned from my father. I also enjoy collecting them for myself. I collect specifically the movie posters of a Mexican movie poster designer, an artist named Ernesto Cabral. And his work has ended up on my arms here, my sleeve tattoos, which are wonderful to show here on radio again. I collect vinyl records mm-hmm. of all shapes and sizes, whether they're 78s, 33s, or 45s. And I collect vintage clothing and mid-century furnishings.
It's like vintage house. You have a very vintage house.
I'm lucky enough to, during the housing drop about 9 years ago, I was able to find a bank-owned foreclosure out here, a 1955 four-bedroom.
And it hasn't changed.
That's a chain.
Oh, no, it's changed quite a lot because, man, that was a crack house.
He's taking it back to its original state.
Almost. Because not only do you sing the music, I mean, you live it because you dress it, you dress the part, you live the part. So
I think that comes from my acting background of needing to dress and be in the middle of a character all the time. I thought I couldn't fit into a swing dance music scene or a doo-wop mm-hmm. scene or a rockabilly scene or a punk scene. Mm-hmm. Even back when I was just pure punk, I had to dress the part. If I didn't have my Doc Martens laced up just so, if I didn't have my leather jacket just so and painted just right with the right correct pins, I'd be a poser. And nobody wants to be Mo the Poser. Very few people just want to be Little Mo. I think it's just me.
So what about you, Mike? Yeah, what about your hobbies?
I like to write passions. Music. It's okay. Music mostly.
He likes political debate and public speaking, as you can see.
I write music, compose, play guitar, take my son to his hockey games. Okay. That's like taking up a lot of time lately. Yeah. He's 8 and doing pretty good. Mm-hmm. That's about it.
I think we can say we both love the travel mm-hmm. that our musical
I love to travel.
Collaboration
like
is getting
records
us.
As well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. His wife is a wonderful DJ, DJ mm-hmm. Nuria.
Yeah.
On a special.
Where is she playing out regularly these days?
Yeah, she doesn't have a regular gig now. She does Tiki Oasis every year.
Down in San Diego.
Down San Diego. When we were in Spain, she had a lot of gigs. She ran this place called the Louie Louie Bar in Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
She
would
DJ there.
Yeah.
She would DJ all over in Madrid.
You guys have to close out with a song, maybe?
Yeah. We got a couple more. What do you want to do?
Yeah, we got a couple more, yeah.
I don't know.
There Stands the Glass Then. This is a Webb Pierce song that a lot of people have covered, so why not me?
Mm-hmm. Kind of medium tempo?
Yeah, sure. Here stands the glass that'll ease all my pain, helps to settle my brain. It's my first one today. There stands the glass that'll hide all my tears, put sand into my fears. Brother, I'm on my way. You see, I'm wondering where you are tonight, wondering if you are all right. I'm wondering, do you think on me? In my misery, there stands the glass. Fill it up to the brim until my sorrows grow dim. It's my first one today. You guys have heard me play here with various degrees of success. Ten years ago, on a cold, dark night, there was someone killed neath the town hall light. Well, there were a few at the scene, but they all agreed that the slayer who ran, he looked a lot like me. And the judge said, "Son, what is your alibi? If you were somewhere else, then you won't have to die." Well, I spoke not one word, for although it meant my life, I had been in the arms of my best friend's wife. Not true. She walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wave. Nobody knows, nobody sees. Nobody knows but me. The sky California was high and eternity was near. Oh, she stands in the crowd, but she sheds not one tear. But sometimes late at night, when the cold winds blow, in a long black veil, oh, she cries o'er my bones. She walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody cares but me. Nobody knows, nobody but me.
So we're gonna
thank open you very
up.
Much.
So we're gonna open up the questions to if anybody in the audience has a question for Mo or Mike. It's your turn.
You said your acting background. I didn't hear anything about that.
Well, there's not much really to talk about. No, I've been drawn to the stage for way too long in my life. I've been seeking that spotlight for way too long, and. My father, among hoarding other things, also, you know, had the movie poster collection. Mm-hmm. He had a film collection, reel to reel, 16mm, Super 8, 8, 35mm. Basements, attics, ballrooms filled with this stuff. And part of the ballroom was a movie room because they had the big blank walls. He'd set up the projector, show me movies. When I was 4 years old, I remember seeing Tyrone Powers, The Mark of Zorro, 1938, with Basil Rathbone and Hubba Hubba, Linda Darnell. And my dad explained to me that that man jumping over the walls and riding the horses and fencing so beautifully and slashing the candles and carving a Z into the walls was playing pretend. And people all over the world loved him for the way he played pretend and paid him money to do it. I'm like, wow, there doesn't seem to be a better job in the world than just about that. And I got on stage within the next 6 months doing local regional theater and graduated to becoming a curtain puller at the Cleveland Playhouse, singing with the Cleveland Orchestra Children's Chorus, soloing for Leonard Bernstein when I was 12, singing in the Cleveland Opera the same year, doing the opera Carmen. Let me see, I did a local cable show called Cleveland Kids Incorporated, which was like a PM magazine or a local interest show done on local independent channels, early cable. We won ACE Awards back when there were ACE Awards for best children's productions in like 1982 and 83. Did local commercials, a lot of local theater through high school and high school productions, and came out here to San Diego, to the only college that would take me with a theatrical degree in mind, to the United States International University, that's USIU, which was down in San Diego. I was there for 2 years. That college collapsed and went belly up bankrupt during the Gulf War. That was George Senior's war, going over to the Gulf. Because the people who were donating money to keep the arts program alive were also heavily invested in Kuwaiti oil. So they were like, oh, better pull back and hold on to our money for right now. School closed. I ended up at CalArts in Valencia, the California Institute of Fine Art, where I was for a grand total of a year and a half before I managed to get myself kicked out because I was just too radical to be a student. And I wanted to experience life on life's terms. So hardcore, right, Mike?
Very,
very hardcore. I came down first to Venice and then living in Santa Monica and then slowly migrated east to Marina, to by the 405, I can't remember the name of the area, and then West Hollywood and finally up here to Pasadena, all the time finally gaining an agent, doing music videos for other bands like Green Day and Three Doors Down, commercials, short films. I was on the Bold and the Beautiful soap opera for one episode. I've done TV episodic work for like Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose Place and Titans. All Aaron Spelling production for some reason. I don't get it. But then I was able to do a couple art house films. One that I produced called Baseball Jesus. Another one that I co-wrote and co-starred in called The Ghastly Loves of Johnny X, which is available now on Amazon, YouTube, Netflix, and you can buy the Blu-ray even if you feel so inclined. But it's a tremendously culty film. It's shot in black and white. It's actually the last film shot on black and white film. Even the Academy Award winning Best Picture, The Artist, was shot on digital and then blown up because we bought the film stock from Europe before they could get it. So the film looks wonderful. And we have the last on-film acting job that Kevin McCarthy, the original lead for Invasion of the Body Snatchers, did. And we have Creed Bratton from The Office. We have Paul Williams, a wonderful singer, songwriter, composer, and a couple other different cameos that you might see pop up in there. It's really a fun horror, sci-fi, musical, juvenile delinquent, drive-in movie theater, black and white tribute, I will say, to the films of Roger Corman. Gosh, I said that all in one breath. Stop me now before I just talk again. Lord.
Yeah. Does anybody have another question for Mo? Or Mike?
You are always witty and on. I've known you for a long time. How did you learn this?
Sugar. For those of you out in Radio Land who can't see, I'm clutching an energy drink right now. I always seem to want more attention, even when I was 5 years old going to auditions, you know, saying, yes, I will be Snow White and the Huntsman in this scene. I will play Doc and Sleepy and Goofy, because I know them all from the movie. You don't need these other actors. Just give me the costumes. I'll do it. And I've got the photographs of that show to prove it, man. I don't know. I took the right classes from the right people. I just had the right upbringing from family members who weren't inclined to be spotlight seekers themselves, but were, you know, supportive of enough. On my mother's side is a acting background. Her grandfather, my great-grandfather, was a character actor with 400 film, TV, and Broadway credits to his name. He has a star on Vine Street, just south of Hollywood Boulevard, in front of the Ricardo Montalban Theater, as it's named now. He has a Tony Award for Best Actor in a Drama, 1955, for the original Broadway production of Come Back, Little Sheba. His name was Sidney Blackmer, and he was in film, feature film, from 1914 to 1969. From the Perils of Pauline serials, you know, tying the heroines to the railroad tracks, to being the lead villain, head of the satanic cult in Polanski's Rosemary's Baby. He was the next door neighbor with Ruth Gordon. And so, I mean, in between that, he did films like Shirley Temple's Heidi, Little Caesar, How to Murder Your Wife with Jack Lemmon, High Society with Crosby, Sinatra, and Grace Kelly. So that's where the actor's blood comes from. I think that's just
more ways to be seen and not heard.
They might have tried. man, I don't know. I was just seeing all this beautiful, hearing all this beautiful music, seeing all these beautiful films from, you know, the Stooges shorts to Gunga Din or Captain Blood or, gosh, great comedies of that era, the 30s and 40s as well, specifically what my father ran to. And earlier stuff like Keaton and Chaplin. That just made me the creature that you see sitting before you on this stool. Scary, I know. I know. Ladies and gentlemen, the back row is now slowly sneaking towards the door. They're scared for their lives.
So do you guys have one more song or a couple more? What do you want
to
do?
You Belong to Me?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. We're going to do one from our Dynaflow set now, because we've been doing primarily Unholy Four songs with a little bit of a rock and country edge. This is a song that we stole from the classic doo-wop group, the Duprees. Kind of fixed the tempo a tiny bit, gave it a Spanish flair from Mike as well. Mike Sobieski again on guitar. And I want to thank the Urban Homestead people for... first of all, migrating from Belgium and coming on over here eventually, setting up this wonderful home and inviting all of us here. The entire Dervais family is just blessed with a heart that just keeps on giving, and fruits and veggies too. So this is a song you might recognize done at a slightly Dynaflow-ish pace. Other singers singing right now. I see the pyramids along the Nile. Watch that sunrise on a tropic isle. Just remember, darling, all the while that you place in old Algiers. Send me photographs and souvenirs. Just remember when a dream appears that you to sing four parts with one voice.
Okay, so dynamics, I don't know. Well, we want to thank you, Mo and Mike, for joining us today on our Urban Homestead podcast. We really appreciate you coming out, especially Mo after your eye surgery just about 2 days ago.
Drama.
Yeah. And sharing your music. Yeah, and you're going to have a surgery again tomorrow. So
fun times.
Yes, so we want to send our prayers with you today when you leave
for successful surgery and recovery and speedy recovery. And thank you so much for sharing your music and your passions with us today. We really appreciate you being here and being part of our lives for the last 4 years and supporting us and everybody here. Once again, how can people find out about you and share that, and then we'll sign off?
I hate to be that Facebook whore, but that's what I is. It's really the best way to find out all the information about upcoming gigs, merchandise, music. Facebook, look for The Unholy Four for the Rockabilly Quartet, and Little Mo and the Dinoflows for the Doo-Wop Octet. We have 6 Doo-Wop full-length albums available. We also have vinyl and t-shirts. We have 2 full-length Rockabilly albums, a EP CD, and vinyl 45s as well for The Unholy Four. And we are not too proud to play your backyard. Either band. Concert halls and living room walls. That's us.
Thank you guys.
Thanks so much.
So appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Is now when the closing music and credits are rolling? Oh. You doing happy trails? Yeah, do it. Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling on till then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together? Just bring the smile and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails to you till we meet again. Look, I think I can see Gene Autry under the ground.
Let's go down to the urban homestead, Pasadena by the freeway. Right down there on the urban homestead, Jules and his family are working away. Come on down to the farm in the city, back to the future, back to the plan. Right down there on the urban homestead, loving the life back into the land.
Oh, ooh, ooh, help the garden grow,
singing.
Oh, ooh, ooh,
we've got to help the garden grow.
The Urban Homestead theme song was written and recorded by Tom Fair. Thanks, Tom.
We've come to the end of this show.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Be sure to tune in again. Until next time, this is Annie,
Justin,
Jordan. Keep on growing.
Oh.